Good morning. Welcome to this hearing of the Senate Tax Committee. Our first order of business will be adoption of the minutes from February 2nd. Are there any corrections? Seeing no corrections, the minutes are approved as presented. Members, you have on the top of your packets today the governor's budget recommendations for the tax bill for 2023. The plan is to have the bill introduced or in the hopper by 11 a.m. so it will be shown on the bill introductions tomorrow.
It's actually not ready yet. We won't see it today.
Okay, I guess they were too ambitious yesterday afternoon and the bill is not ready. So we hope to get it tomorrow and then have it introduced on the next day. The first bill in front of us today is Senate File 526. Senator Klein.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you for hearing Senate File 526 this morning. Thank you also to my co-authors.
Klein, I'm going to have to ask you to speak louder, if you don't mind, or closer to the mic.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for hearing Senate File 526 this morning. Thank you also to my co-authors, Senator Putnam, Senator Nelson, Senator Rest, and Senator Rarick. Madam Chair, as you know, Senate File 526 creates a state aid program for the soil and water conservation districts with an annual appropriation of $22 million. 70% of that would be split evenly between all SWCDs, 20% would be apportioned based on a district's share of non-public lands, and then the remaining 10% would be based on a district's share of a state population. In previous years, as you know, Madam Chair, these funds were appropriated biennially from the Clean Water Fund, and this would create dedicated funding from the general fund. I do have testifiers, but if you prefer, Madam Chair, I can run through the bill.
Well, Senator Klein, I prefer you go through the bill section by section, if you will.
Gladly, Madam Chair. Subdivision 1 creates definitions. Subdivision 2 describes the purpose. Subdivision 3 is the portion, creates the distribution of the funds in that 70-20-10 percentage that I described. Subdivision 4 requires BWSR to annually certify the Commissioner of Revenue, CDs eligible for aid, and the aid amounts for each SWCD. Subdivision 5 describes the use of the proceeds. Subdivision 6 requires the Commissioner of Revenue to distribute SWCD aid on the same annual schedule as local government aid and county program aid. Subdivision 7 is the appropriation of $22 million annually from the general fund to the Commissioner of Revenue. And Subdivision 8 allows for aid amount corrections as needed. And that's the bill, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much. Senator Klein, I'm going to just turn the gavel over to Senator Bibble for a minute because I want to offer an amendment. And that is to delete lines 116, 17, and 18. It is not the tradition of the Senate to have purpose statements in a bill. We let the language speak for itself. The issues of purpose statements will come up in the conference committee, but not in the Senate. So, Senator Dibble, I move deletion of lines 16, 17, and 18, subdivision 2.
Senator Rest moves an oral amendment to delete lines 1.16 through 1.18. Senator Klein.
Senator Klein.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I agree with your approach, and I accept the amendment.
Senator Klein, I apologize for not having read the bill first. So that's my motion,
right.
Senator Dibble,
right.
Mr. Chairman.
Members, any discussion? All right. All those in favor of the Rest motion, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, say no. Motion carries.
Okay. Senator Klein, continue.
Madam Chair, if you are ready, I can introduce my first testifier, Mr. Chuck Rao, who's the president of the Minnesota Association of Soil and Water Conservation District.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself.
Sure enough. Again, my name is Chuck Rao. I'm a supervisor at the Benton County SWCD, Soil and Water Conservation District. I also am currently in the position of the president of the Minnesota Association of Soil and Water Conservation Districts. The MASWCD represents the 440 elected SWCD board members like myself, and there are more than 460 plus or minus resource professionals. As an elected unit of local government, our current funding is shared, a shared obligation of both state and local local resources. Counties are a strong partner for their local share of funding, and we greatly appreciate their support for our efforts. State funding over the past several years, however, has been a struggle. While we are truly grateful for the Clean Water Fund appropriations for funding our boots on the ground projects across the state, every 2 years, we need to face the challenges and uncertainty around that funding. The funding proposed in this SWCD aid legislation would provide a more efficient long-term funding mechanism that would allow SWCDs across the state to better focus their manpower and their resources on locally identified projects. With approximately $14 million in contributions coming from our local partners at counties and $22 million in the SWCD aid, we can come much closer to fulfilling our funding needs. How much closer? Well, currently, our our Clean Water Fund allotment provides a roughly an average of $133,000 per year per district across the state. With this proposal, that number would increase to $240,000 per district across the state. This would allow us to more adequately leverage our federal conservation resources and increase our pace of progress toward meeting our soil health and clean water goals. In addition, it would allow more of the clean water funds to go to on-the-ground implementation in the future. Now, some example of how some of these funds would be used, I can pull up Benton SWCD, my own district. We would take these funds and hire an additional technician, which would allow us to identify, evaluate, and facilitate more water quality and soil health issues in our county that are primarily actions primarily funded by federal grants coming in, and provide additional services to producers interested in the Minnesota Agricultural Water Quality Certification Program. Crow Wing SWCD, they would use these dollars for additional staff and resources to address projects like rerouting an ATV trail that's near a lake in their area. They want to mitigate some soil erosion issues, and they currently simply don't have the time or the resources to do that. Clay County tells us that they would enhance their staffing to meet landowner interest in soil health practices such as cover crops, also purchase equipment for assisting in the establishment of pollinator habitat in their area. Finally, Dakota SWC tells us that they would be able to hire another conservation technician for one-on-one landowner outreach and project implementation. Now, keep in mind, a recent survey tells us that SWCD staff are well-respected and trusted by landowners across the state. And these relationships are the core element of our ability to facilitate the voluntary projects that utilize both state and federal conservation funds. So those are just a few of the examples of how the SWCs across the state would use this funding to boost their capacity in getting conservation projects implemented and increase our ability to utilize the significant projected increases in federal dollars coming towards conservation in the future. So with that, I would thank you all for considering the SWCD aid and how important it is to our conservation delivery system. And I'll close by saying, thank you again, Senator Klein, for carrying this bill, for Chair Rest, for Senators Putnam and Nelson for signing on to this bill. And I'd like to also mention that we have several SWCDs, those particularly with members on this committee watching remotely or possibly even in the in-house with us here. And finally, those that have given us their letters of support, the AMC, the Farmers Union, the Land Stewardship Project, and Nature Conservancy, to mention a few. So we've had great support for this effort, and we thank you all for the support that we received last year in our efforts and hope to see that continue. With that, we can open for any questions, ma'am.
Thank you very much. Are there any questions or comments for the witness? Thank you very much. Senator Klein, you have another witness.
Madam Chair, I have one more testifier, with your permission, Ms. Sheila Vanney, Assistant Director of the MASWCD.
Ms. Vanney, welcome to the committee. If you'd identify yourself for the for the record.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members. I'm Sheila Vanney, MASWCD Assistant Director, and I'm actually here mainly as a resource, but want to again extend our gratitude for the time today.
Okay, thank you. Senator Klein, I have another suggestion for an amendment. Ms. Pollack, I wonder, or at least something here on page 2, lines 27, 8 amount corrections. The language says that if there's a clerical error made, that in calculating the aid payment, that the correct amounts would be sent to the commissioner, and then the commissioner would then distribute additional aid payments in the same manner as in the rest of the bill. But Senator Klein, Ms. Pollack, what if there was an overpayment rather than an underpayment? There's no there's no accommodating that, and it would seem to me that by the usual definition of a clerical error, that we would not ask the Board of Water and Soil Resources to send it back, and it would just be hold harmless for the for a mistake in the calculation if they get more than they would have, unless it's impossible to get more. Senator Klein or Ms. Pollack, do you have a remedy here?
Madam Chair, I believe Mr. Arneson can answer that question.
Mr. Arneson.
Madam Chair, you raise a good point, and this is this particular question I raised with the aid administrator and property tax researchers at the Department of Revenue. The proposed SWCD aid program is a little bit different than, for example, local government aid. So LGA, as members know, is certified for aids payable in the subsequent calendar year. This SWCD aid proposal would be different in a couple ways. So firstly, the aid amounts, the language in front of members does not require any agency to certify the aid amounts to the SWCDs themselves. The certification occurs between the Board of Water and Soil Resources, or Bowser, and the Department of Revenue. In the case, and secondly, the aid is paid in the calendar year that the amounts are certified from Bowser to DOR. So it's different from other aid programs that members may be familiar with in those two key ways. In the event that that in your example, the aid amounts for a district were overestimated, if Bowser corrected that amount before the first half aid payment was issued, the first half aid payment would be corrected, per Bowser's instruction. If the correction occurred after the first half aid payment were issued, but before the second half aid payment, it's my understanding that under this language, the agency would true up the second half aid payment so that every district received the corrected certified amount. Though in conversation again with the administrators at the agency, I think some additional technical language to make that even clearer would be useful if this proposal were to move forward and be considered later by the committee.
Mr. Arneson, Senator Klein, Mr. Arneson, do you have suggested language for us?
Not at the moment, Madam Chair. I think it's kind of a matter of what the intent of the committee is. There's language, for example, if members turn to page 3, the last clause of that sentence, additional aid payments shall be made from the general fund and shall not diminish the distributions made to other soil and water conservation districts under this section. So that sort of implies to me in a way that if the correction comes after the first half aid payment is made, that any district that, well, let me back up a second. The language clearly limits the appropriation amount to $22 million. Mm-hmm. There's no authority beyond that. Mm-hmm. So if the correction were to suggest that the aid amounts for some districts were to increase, that would almost require an additional appropriation authority, right? If the corrections should not diminish the distributions made to other soil and water conservation districts under this language, though it's not entirely clear what's intended. Just as context, I understand that, as testifiers have indicated, a proposal like this is included in the governor's budget this year. Mm-hmm. And I understand that the appropriation language and the corrective language in the governor's language is expected to be slightly different and may, in fact, feature the corrections that the committee may otherwise want to make.
Senator Klein, we were going to, of course, lay the bill over, but I'm going to ask you, if you will, to work with Mr. Arneson and take a look at the language that's coming up in the governor's bill. And we're going to bring your bill back up at some future, take it off the table, and have this bill reflect the more general understanding before we put it in the omnibus bill. Is that agreeable to you?
Madam Chair, yes, and just to your points, I would agree that the likelihood of an overpayment is equally as likely as an underpayment, and we should have language that defines that situation, and also that the capped appropriation of $22 million is not consistent with this directive, that other districts would not have a diminution in their funds in that circumstance. So I will work with Mr. Arneson to resolve those two situations.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Senator. Senator Klein, and when you're ready with your preferred language for that subdivision, if you would let Mr. Berggren know, we'll bring this bill back up, get it the way that we want it going into the omnibus bill. I guess I'm revealing my prejudice in favor of this bill, but if you would do that, then we wouldn't have any confusion at some point about what is the preferred language dealing with corrections. Okay?
Very good. Thank you, okay. Madam Chair.
Any questions from other members? Seeing none. I'm sorry, Senator Nelson.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. And Senator Klein, thank you for taking this up. I did want to mention just some of the conversations that we had around this table regarding SWCDs asking for a general fund appropriation. When they have a dedicated funding in the Clean Water Bill. And I just wanted to note that over the interim, I spent additional time with the SWCDs and our particular and constituents. And it was very clear that, quite frankly, we were not truly maximizing the good work that our SWCDs could do. And one of the pieces that I had known from years prior when Governor Dayton brought forth the riparian buffer strips That's where I learned the most about SWCDs. While there was great controversy over the governor's buffer strips proposal, everyone was laser-focused on, we want the SWCDs involved in this. We trust our soil water conservation districts. And I trust them as well. And I think that this, the bill that you brought forward here, Senator Klein, will truly help our SWCDs maximize those opportunities for our ag producers, for the innovations that are, whether it be double cropping, all types of innovations coming forward that are really going to help with clean water, soil health. And so I'm glad to support this, Senator Klein, and look forward to the thoughtful amendment coming forward.
Yep. Thank you very much, Senator Nelson, Senator Klein, Senate file. There's a number here. 526 is laid over. Thank you. The next bill is Senate file 580, Senator Limmer. Senator Limmer, welcome to the committee. If you would explain Senate File 580, and I have some questions once you've done that.
Sure.
And we'll listen to your witness, of course. Yeah.
Good morning, Madam Chair and committee. Senate File 580 is a proposal that was crafted by the tax law section of the Minnesota Bar Association. The bill simplifies the process for initiating a legal challenge to a property tax assessment. The current statute is very complicated. It has complicated requirements that can be difficult to comply with, especially for Minnesotans who don't have legal representation or have hired an attorney. In addition, many counties have come up with their own service requirements, but they do not match the statute or what the statute requires. This bill would simplify the process, establish consistency, and eliminate confusion so that both citizens and counties have a clear understanding of the service requirements for property tax petitions. I have with me today Attorney Lynn Lene, who can provide additional information.
Welcome to the committee, if you'd identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Lynn Lene, and I'm an attorney at Frederickson and Byron, practicing in property tax appeals. I am here representing the Minnesota State Bar Association. The goal of this proposed bill is really to simplify and modernize the property tax the requirements for serving property tax petitions. Currently, to serve a property tax petition, a property owner must serve 6 copies of a petition on 4 different offices. That is, unless there is a combined auditor treasurer's office, and then the requirements are different. This is burdensome, as many counties don't want or need 6 paper copies of a petition. It is also difficult, as has been shown with COVID. Many counties don't want their offices open to the public for safety reasons. And so this has made it difficult to personally serve 6 copies of a petition in 4 different separate offices. So because of this, we have been working to, the bill in front of you proposes to simplify and modernize the service requirements. It would allow 1 copy of the petition to be served on 1 office, the county auditor, which is standard for any other action brought against a county. It would allow the county by choice to allow electronic service, either by email or electronic upload to a website. And this would be really beneficial, especially for pro se or unrepresented taxpayers, as they would have greater access to filing property tax appeals. It would be easier for them and cheaper for them, as they don't have to actually physically go to offices, especially when we think about rural Minnesota or St. Louis County, which is very large and can take many hours to travel through. Finally, what this bill would also allow is it would allow a property owner to personally serve themselves the petition as opposed to hiring a service processor. So with that, if you have any questions.
Are there any questions for Senator Limmer or the witness? members, we have been moving bills to the floor that have no fiscal impact, but the chair of the House Tax Committee is uncomfortable with that. So what we're going to do instead is to, we're going to keep a list of these bills, and we're going to ask her to review them. And if she agrees with us that there is no reason to delay consideration of this bill, we'll do it then. If she has misgivings, we will keep them in the committee and hold them over for the for the omnibus bill. I'm trying to keep the omnibus bill as few pages as possible and not have controversial subjects, anything but controversial subjects in it. I also tried to hand this bill off to the Judiciary Committee, and they didn't want it. So, Senator Limmer, sorry about that. So, there was another way of making this bill, the omnibus bill, thinner. Senator Limmer, if you have any final comment, otherwise we'll lay the bill over.
Madam Chair and committee, I think we've covered the bill effectively. I think this would be a good tool for our taxpayers. It would economize their time and their effort, as well as their cost. And as you noted, Madam Chair, there's no cost to this bill. So I think
and
it's
the policy
a good
in
direction.
Here, seems to me, Senator Limmer, is a real improvement, and I would thank the State Bar for making this suggestion.
I would agree.
Senator Dibble.
I apologize, Madam Chair. Your thoughts occur when they occur, and so I'm stepping on Senator Limmer's final statement. But I did have a question, if I may.
Senator Dibble.
And if it was mentioned that I missed it, I apologize. Sometimes my mind wanders. Have we heard from the counties? Are local units supportive of this? I assume they are, but I just wanted to ask for the record.
The Minnesota State Bar Association has been working.
Ms. Fanny, you have to go through the chair first. Oh. But go ahead. You just it's for the tape so that we know who is speaking. So I recognize you, Ms. Fanny.
I appreciate that. Thank you, Madam Chair. The Minnesota State Bar Association has been working with these various interest groups for the last 3 years. This particular version of the bill was sent out 2 or 3 months ago, and there has been no opposition to it.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay. Any other questions or comments? Then Senate File 580 is laid over. The next bill on our agenda is Senator McEwen, and here she is. Senator McEwen brings us Senate File 637. Senator McEwen, if you would first explain your bill, and we will. I see you have an author's amendment. Is it just one?
Correct, just one, Madam Chair.
Senator Weber moves the A2 amendment. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say no. The amendment is adopted, and so now we have the amendment adds two lines after line 18 and then deletes lines 19 and 20. Okay. So, Senator McEwen, if you would explain your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. we appreciate very much the Tax Committee hearing this bill. This is an issue that I was introduced to when I entered the Senate a couple of years ago, and I know that people on the House side and the Senate side have both been working on this, so I'm very grateful to you for hearing this. This bill addresses an issue that we're dealing with in Duluth in regard to the St. Anne's Elder Care Facility. The St. Anne's is a pillar in the Duluth community. It serves impoverished seniors and has a mission to do that. It's been operating in the central hillside neighborhood of Duluth for over 100 years. And as I understand it, what occurred is that over the decades, St. Anne's never had to pay property taxes. But in the 1980s, there was a change to our state tax laws, and tax exemptions were written out for senior care centers, but they were categorized by the license that they hold. And when that happened, the St. Anne's facility was categorized with public housing rather than with senior care centers. So in the auto-exempt category are hospitals, nursing homes, board and care centers, senior daycare centers, and the like. St. Anne's provides those same services. So it provides housing, it provides meals, nursing services, housekeeping activities, and whatnot. So this is really, unfortunately, what appears to be a mistake. It actually took me a little while to get my mind around it as I was learning about this issue, because clearly St. Anne's is a nonprofit with this mission and does provide this type of care. So it was confusing as to why they were being required to pay property taxes. It seems to be an oversight. So we have crafted a very tailored bill to take care of this elder care facility so that they will not have to be annually in peril of being able to keep their doors open and to continue to provide these vital services, not just for Duluth, but regionally for seniors living in poverty or on the edge of poverty in northeastern Minnesota. Madam Chair, that is, in summation, what the bill does and what is it about and what it's about. And I also have the Executive Director of St. Anne's here, Mr. Scott Johnson, to offer some testimony as well when the Chair would like to hear that.
Thank you, Senator McEwen. Who would like to testify first? Mr. Johnson, if you'd identify yourself, please, for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Scott Johnson, and I'm the executive director for St. Anne's Assisted Living Facility. And as Senator McEwen so eloquently put, St. Anne's has been part of our community for 130 years, a long history of mission and service to the Duluth and St. Louis County community. And we are a 501c3 not-for-profit, and we are governed by a volunteer board of directors. And we are also uniquely an independent agency, so we're not associated with any other corporate structure or any larger nonprofit organization. So as I often tell my staff, it is just us. And as we go forth and try to serve our community, you know, the responsibilities of keeping us open so we can do that really does fall upon us and people as yourself in situations like this. I want to, since Senator McEwen spoke so much about the bill and its history and where it came from, I just want to reiterate that it was over 100 years of no taxation for property taxes for St. Anne's until the late 80s. And I want to talk a little bit also about the percentage of the people that we serve. It's a 55 and over community, and at the moment we serve just a little short of 90 individuals. So certainly COVID and the pandemic and post-pandemic world has taken its toll on all assisted living facilities in Minnesota, including ours. 65% of the people that live at St. Anne's are on some kind of public funding, whether it be HUD money to help with their rent, whether it be the elderly waiver program to subsidize food and nursing. And then for those that fall in between the cracks of some of those programs, which happens quite often because they can be slow and lengthy and difficult to one enroll into and stay enrolled into, we also offer rent and service discounts to help people be able to have housing and services. So with that 65% of our population being in that bracket, it's important for us to not have a property tax situation that just simply takes away from our ability to serve those individuals. We've been there a long time, and we've served this community a very long time, and hope that we can continue to do that for Duluth and St. Louis County and the greater Minnesota. So thank you for considering this bill.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. Before I call on the next witness, just want to point out that what the bill is doing is adding a section to 27202, which is a whole list of exempt property. So when it says is exempt from taxation, what it's talking about is in the statute that exempts property from taxation. Before we go to your witness, Senator Klein, did you have a question?
I do, Madam Chair, and I can make it now, or I can go after the witness at your discretion.
Why don't you go ahead now?
Okay. Thank you. Yeah, for either Mr. Johnson or perhaps for fiscal staff, I noticed that the fiscal note reflects an expenditure of $10,000 to the state, and that's based on the fact that there will be shifts, and that will generate increased homeowner refunds in through the remainder of Duluth property. So that's sort of a proxy for the dollar amount of this actual exemption. And first of all, let me say, Mr. Johnson, thank you for the good work that you're doing for the elderly of Duluth. But can you give the committee a sense of what the actual dollar amount is of the property tax that will be eliminated under this bill? Thank you.
Mr. Johnson.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. $120,000 annually.
Thank you.
Any other questions for Mr. Johnson? Senator Weber.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My question is, are there other facilities across the state that were affected in the same way that yours was with the change that was made in the 1980s?
Mr. Johnson.
Are you aware of any?
Mr. Johnson.
I do not have an answer for that question.
Mr. Johnson, I'm not sure. You need to go through the chair. So you
thank you, Madam Chair. Yep. Thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah, I am not aware of your question. I do know there's approximately 400 nonprofit assisted livings in the state of the 2,400 assisted living licenses that exist. But I don't know that, you know, assisted living facilities are new to Minnesota in the last, you know, 20 plus years. Our organization has that unique situation of 130 years of many different licenses and changes over that time as that healthcare space has changed significantly. I see the history. Can I share a little history just to go with the St. Anne's? So we were owned by the Benedictine Sisters until the 1980s. And when that law occurred, and basically when I read our history, we ran out of nuns, and they were elderly themselves. And it was a period of time where that, had it happened 5 years sooner or 10 years sooner, when there was a more, less of an aging group that was taking and managing St. Anne's, I don't know that that bill would have ever happened without us being listed in it. But it was also a change of ownership and things at that period in the 80s where, like I said, the Benedictine Sisters were all either passing away or retiring, and St. Anne's became an independent 501c3 separate of the Catholic diocese. It was a real separation of time in our history. Kind of the first paid staff there, the first paid administrators were all in that same period of time. So there was lots of changes and things that occurred during that time for our organization specifically. And then the state had, you know, a very specific list of exemptions that were made. And if you look at those exemptions, they were all tied to basically Medicare or medical assistance or federally funded kind of programs. And places like St. Anne's were always not into a singular license category. So for an example, previous to the new assisted living laws that just occurred here about 2 years ago, there was no assisted living license for a facility like ours, and we functioned just like a boarding care facility would have. But for us to operate, we had a home care license, we had a restaurant license, we had an apartment building, you know, permits with the city. It was like this conglomeration of things that created this ongoing, you know, mission that happened, as we know, as St. Anne's. So we're actually very grateful for the unified licensing that occurred, because it does kind of represent all these facilities, and for us, this 130-year history of kind of piecing together what would be the things that we need to provide service to our community. So back to your question, I don't know. But we have an interesting history, which I'm sure if there was another one, it would be similar. So if something else is out there in the state that has endured, you know, 50, 80, 100 years of service, it could very well be another one. But I'm not aware.
Senator Weber?
Madam Chair, I think our testifier could wind up running for the legislature someday based on his answer. So.
Yes, indeed. Your other witness is Catherine Schneeweis. Schneeweis is one of my favorite German surnames. Of course, as you know, it means white snow. Not snow white, but white snow. Yep. So welcome to the committee, and we look forward to your testimony.
And Madam Chair, just for clarification, Ms. Schneeweis is here in her capacity in the financial work that she does with St. Anne's to answer any questions or provide any background, but does not have any prepared testimony for the committee. Thank you.
That's just fine. We welcome you anyway. Okay. We don't need your testimony. Any other questions for Senator McEwen or her witness or her guest? Senator Nelson.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you so much for bringing this. I do remember reading about St. Anne's last year, maybe some of the challenges, but I would just say two things. One, thank you for what you're doing. We know that it's incredibly important. Secondly, I can't take much credence in an argument that the tax was not around before 1980, and therefore we shouldn't have it today. You didn't say that, but that is a concern. We could say that about a lot of taxes. We could say that about the misnamed statewide general levy, for example, this property tax on all of our Main Street businesses. But my serious question has to do, though, with similarly situated properties. We try to, as much as possible, do things for similarly situated properties. And you mentioned there's 400, perhaps, we don't know, similarly situated properties. And sometimes in legislation we do, just like in line 1.19, we specify that something is for cities of the first class. We have a few cities of the first class. We know they have unique challenges and unique needs. But I have to say, this is the first time I've actually seen the cities of the first class whittled down to a population less than 110. So clearly this is like specific for St. Anne's. But the broader question is, are there other very similarly situated entities that, we might be seeing them in the future, for example? And I'm just wondering if you could specify for me, I think you did, but I might have missed it. Other than the wonderful history of St. Anne's, today, what's so particular about St. Anne's with this needed property tax exemption, as opposed to, should there be another Benedictine assisted living in Rochester, for example? So I'm just wondering, is there a special situation that I might not know about?
Senator Nelson, are you asking Senator McEwen or Mr. Johnson?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I will ask Senator McEwen, and she may turn to her.
Senator McEwen.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Senator. I think that Mr. Johnson articulated sort of our sense of we know that there are these other organizations out there that could potentially be in the same category, but without having done a more comprehensive survey of what their unique situations are, the population that they serve, is it the same, all the different factors, the services that they provide. I guess I'm very sympathetic to this idea that if this is a problem for other facilities statewide, that the best practice would be to correct this for all of those facilities. And certainly I would be in favor of doing that if that is the case. But without having done a more comprehensive search to know at this time what we've been zeroing in on is, in our district, we know that we have this particular facility that has been struggling being able to pay these property taxes and has had to make different arrangements over the years to try to make that work, and it's been an ongoing struggle. So we have specifically zeroed in on this particular facility in my district because we know so much about it and we know the details about it, so want to provide some relief here. But with that, perhaps Mr. Johnson has some extra insight to add.
Mr. Johnson, do you have further comment?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. To go specifically to answer your question, my first thing would be, why would you tax any nonprofit? Secondly, I would say St. Anne's specifically, we never evict if you can't pay. So I think that makes us incredibly special. So if you have the inability to pay for your stay at our place, you do not get evicted. And I think that separates us from the Benedictines and all the, for lack of a better word, all the more posh kind of nonprofit assisted living type facilities you might see in the state of Minnesota. So that's what makes us special, I believe.
Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for those good answers. Certainly, and we do that a lot, though, in the tax committee. We do something because there's a one-time need, and then next year we may see similar needs in the same vein. So, and I did like your question, why are we taxing nonprofits? So that's all my questions. Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair.
thank you, Senator Nelson. Any other comments? Then there definitely is a little cost has been explained, and so this will be eligible for the omnibus bill and not the list we're going to start making of bills that have no fiscal impact. So thank you very much, Senator McEwen, Ms. Johnson, Ms. Neweis. Senate File 500 is laid over.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, committee.
Oh, I'm sorry. It was 6:37. I'm ahead of myself.
6:37 as
mentioned. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Now we have Senate Final 500. Senator Housechild. So, Senator Housechild, Your name is also German.
Indeed, Chair.
And how do you translate it?
How do I translate it?
Yes.
House of Children.
House or a house child. I mean,
right.
Actually a house child. Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. So we have Senate File 500 in front of us, and there is a A1 amendment. Senator Housechild moves the A1 amendment. All those in favor, please say aye. Opposed, say no. The motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. even though this is not a delete all amendment, Senator Rothschild, we would like for you to explain the amendment in terms of how it changed the bill that you introduced, if you wouldn't mind doing that.
Certainly, Madam Chair. This is just a little bit of cleanup language regarding a couple of changes for the Hibbing School District, as well as the Northern Lights Academy. For the Hibbing School District, we added a restroom remodel, as well as a re-roofing for the Washington Elementary. And then for the Northern Lights Academy, added some materials and supplies and equipment.
That's on page 3 now?
Right. Yes, page 3.
After line 12.
Yes,
you're
after
adding
line 12.
This, you're adding two projects there. Is that what
That's
you're telling
right.
us? Okay. The Hibbing Washington Elementary School and the high school restroom and project. And then the impact of the starting at line 1.7, what does that do?
On line 1.7, page 4, line 7, delete everything. And after that, we insert materials and supplies to use in the equipment incorporated into the following projects. Independent School District number 6076, exempt sales and use tax imposed under Minnesota statute. So this is materials, supplies, and equipment purchased after December 31st, 2021.
And the effect of that is to do what? Some of the language is the same. Why did you change it?
Madam Chair, if I could, would you mind if I deferred to someone who is working on this project to help answer that specific question?
Well, actually, I would rather ask Senate Counsel then.
Sure.
Sure. Explain that part of it.
Madam Chair, members, the language on starting on 1.7 of the amendment going down through 1.15, as Senator Housechild mentioned, the language on 1.7 to 1.11 provides kind of the framework for the broad exemption, for the exemption for the Northland Learning Center, and then the language on 1.13 to 1.15 would specify these two projects mm-hmm. that would apply to the Northland Learning Center.
Okay, thank you for that. And then Senator Housechild, you also then are deleting on page 4, lines 8 to 11, so that's just taking out all of that and putting in two projects there. Is that your understanding of your amendment?
That's correct, Madam Chair.
Okay, and then starting on line 16 of the amendment and page 4, line 22, once again, you're doing the same kind of thing? Is that right?
That's right. And Madam Chair, and I can also go to council on this question as well, but I think we were just doing some more specific outlining of what the renovations and projects were for the Northern Lights Academy, starting at 1.16 and going down to 1.23.
Okay, and so, I mean, we've adopted the amendment, Senator Housechild, but the point of this is to take away general language and put in specific language. Is that it? I'm not quite following what your amendment did.
Yes, Madam Chair, I'm gonna I will defer to counsel for that question and help answer if I can after she's had a chance to explain.
Ms. Pollack.
Madam Chair, members, yes, Senator Housechild's characterization would be correct. The language on 1.13 to 1.15 provides the two specific projects that would apply to the Northland Learning Center, as opposed to stating simply the renovation and addition to the James Madison building, which is in the language currently. it looks like there would be a new addition to the James Madison Building under the amendment, and then there would be renovations and improvements to the existing building. And then, Madam Chair, on lines 1.12 and 1.13, again, this is providing this is specifying the types of changes. So, construction of a new addition to the existing facility at Northern Lights Academy, and then renovations and improvements to the current existing facility. So, just making the language a little bit more specific as to an addition or a new building and an existing building.
Thank you, Ms. Pollack, and I would also direct members to the revenue estimate, where it names all the schools that would be affected, and then back to the Senate Council's description of each one of these buildings and projects. And we had this bill last year as well. It was in the omnibus. And are there any material changes from the bill that was in there last year, other than naming these specific projects?
Senator Rest, from my understanding, no, there is not any major changes.
All the same. Okay, you have Dr. Schmidt. Welcome to the committee. We're pleased to have your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Dr. Noel Schmidt, and Madam Chair, if you like German names, you're really going to like my last name.
I know that.
I am currently the superintendent for Rock Ridge in northern Minnesota, which is in one of the poorest areas in the state of Minnesota. The reason why I'm in here is to tell you this is one of the best educational stories in the state of Minnesota that you may not have heard of. What has happened up there is absolutely incredible, and which has brought me here to this seat. What happened is that two ancient rival districts, Eveleth-Gilbert, Virginia, and you might have seen there's a movie on hockey that was out of one of the districts. They were also on the front cover of the Star Tribune about a hockey story. Again, hockey is big up there. But what happened is that these two districts, before consolidating, voted in two completely separate elections to build two cooperative elementary schools and one cooperative high school based on Career Academy. Who does this? Nobody. But they did. The folks in northern Minnesota did. So what's happening up there is they passed that, and in addition to, then they voted after the building project to consolidate. I was in four public votes in 18 months, and all four of them passed. What happened is that we started construction on the elementary school, on target, on budget. The high school, on target, on budget. Construction has just finished on the high school, and we will open in the fall of 23. It's the third building that's causing the problems for us, North Star Elementary. This was passed in 2019. The voters passed this. It was budgeted correctly. We even factored in normal inflation, which was at that time 2 or 3%. And then, but because we had 600 kids, we couldn't move. We couldn't start construction right away, because in normal construction, you pass the bond and then you start construction maybe within 12 months or so. We couldn't do that. We had to wait until some buildings were finished so we could move some kids around. And then COVID hit. And we all know what happened with COVID inflation. So specifically on this one building, $7,301,715, just inflationary increase from what the voters thought they were going to get in 2019 to current construction costs. Who has that much money in their general supply to cover this? Nobody does. And we didn't either. And so the folks up there, they did the right thing. They're cooperating. They're working together. They're trying to be on the leading edge, and we are on the leading edge with 21st century skills. This high school, hopefully you can come, is nothing like you have ever seen. This is a very unique building. There's nothing in the upper Midwest like this building because it was designed differently. Project-based learning, higher order thinking skills, working with school business, setting kids out so they get actual real experience. Our kids actually built the dugouts on the new baseball softball fields. So come visit sometime, please. But the reason why I'm here is that we're just asking for, give us some help. Give the folks in northern Minnesota, just give us some help so that the voters get what they thought they were going to get. And so in our particular case, we really needed to go back to 2019 because that's when the original bond was passed. That's when the voters, two completely separate elections, said, yes, we want to go forward. So that's why I'm here, asking to help the voters out so we can build the final building the way the voters thought they were going to get it in 2019.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Dr. Schmidt. Senator Housechild, your other witness.
Thank you, Chair Rest. I had the opportunity to visit the Ely project earlier this year and meet Principal Ann Elke, and so I'm excited to have her testimony on this issue.
Thank you, Senator Housechild. Ms. Elke, welcome to the committee. If you'd identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Ranking Member Weber. My name is Ann Elke, excuse me. I was here last year also speaking about this bill, and I think you all remember my, I think I was introduced as Annie Oakley, so thank you, Senator. I'm the elementary principal for the Independent School District 696 in Ely, Minnesota, pretty much the end of the road in northern Minnesota. I'm proud to say that I'm a graduate of the Ely schools. I returned after college to teach there, and now I have been serving as elementary principal. Let me begin by thanking Senator Housechild for bringing forward this bill, Senate Bill 500, a combined bill for several public school districts in northern Minnesota. It was my honor to testify, like I said before, in front of this committee last year in support of the same effort. In 2020, the citizens of Ely began the process to modernize the Ely School campus by connecting the nearly 100-year-old elementary building and the 100-year-old high school memorial building with a new secured entrance and a new secured building in the middle. That now includes a 21st century learning space for science and technology and engineering, a new gymnasium, a new library and media center, a new food service area, and additional energy efficiency and technology upgrades to the existing two 100-year-old buildings. The entire project was to cost a bit more than $20 million, with $10 million coming from the taxpayers of Ely, and $7 million from taconite taxes as part of the Department of Iron Range Resources School Collaboration Fund. The use of LTFM funding combined with a modest federal grant for a secured entrance made up the difference. As in the case for so many other projects, pandemic-related supply chain issues and increases in the cost of building materials have caused the project to unexpectedly increase by over $6 million for us. The sales tax exemption proposed by Senator Housechild will help us reinvest much-needed dollars back into the project and help to fill our funding holes. In the case of Ely, almost $370,000 can be reinvested in the project as we work to find different ways to fill the funding deficit. I want to assure all the members that our project contains nothing frivolous. We're talking about technology and energy upgrades to two 100-year-old buildings to serve our students and teachers for the years to come. We're talking about safety upgrades that will keep our students and teachers safe, new modern learning spaces so that we can train students with the skills that they'll need to either enter the workforce upon graduation or go on for further education. Chair Rest and Tax Committee members, thank you for your consideration and for your support of public schools like ours in Ely at the end of the road. And if any of you are in Ely, please come by and tour our campus like Senator Housechild has done. Thank you.
Any questions or comments for Senator Housechild or his witnesses? Senator Housechild, we are going to see, and you can tell from that little spreadsheet, the governor has a proposal, but we're going to do a belts and suspenders approach. We're going to consider his general provision, but then the individual bills will also be considered for inclusion, so that if the general provision falls by the wayside, these individual ones can still go forward. So I want to assure other members of that same thing.
Madam Chair, if I might.
Sure, Senator Housechild.
I'm very grateful for that approach because we know that, you know, we never know what happens off ultimately with these omnibus bills, and to be included and have this hearing is a great opportunity. So thank you for hearing this.
And we need to establish that that these individual bills have been heard in the committee to add more gravitas to being able to do that. And also, just a further comment about names. My married name is Rest, but it's not English. It's also German. But it doesn't mean that it's something you should do when you're tired. It's not nearly as elegant as some others. It just means that we're the leftovers. That's where it comes from. It's the remainders, and the Rest family has been documents its history to the late 1500s in Kassel in northern Germany. So, anyway, the meanings of our names, I think, are very interesting to explore, regardless of their origin. So, Senator Housechild, thank you very much for bringing us Senate File 500. It will be laid over for inclusion in the omnibus bill. Tomorrow, what is our agenda for tomorrow? For tomorrow. Go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We're going to take up three bills for Senator Weber, and then we're going to have a little bit longer discussion on the PILT bill that will be before the committee.
Okay. So that's tomorrow's tomorrow's agenda, and then we have some other bills to hear on Thursday. So that concludes the business of the committee, and we are adjourned.
Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
That was great testimony and what you guys are doing.